They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
Welcome back to another episode of the Crossover NBA Podcast. Got a great show lined up for you this week. Recording this from Los Angeles, the, I don't know if it's the basketball center, the center of the basketball universe, but there's a lot going on in LA right now with the Lakers and Clippers. A lot going on in the NBA overall with the Rockets. Everything going on right now in Houston. You got some interesting teams in the Eastern Conference. Phoenix Suns, what are they doing right now in the West? Get into a lot of that with Rohan Nadkarni, the staff writer over at Sports Illustrated. He's back. He joins me in studio for a great conversation about the Rockets, the Suns, the Heat, a few other topics I dive into with Rohan. A little bit later on, Arash Markazi, the columnist for the LA Times. We take a deeper dive into the two LA teams, from the Lakers' fast start, LeBron playing on both ends of the floor, LeBron using this perception that he's washed. I'm not sure who gave him that perception, but that's something he's using as fuel. Plus the Clippers, the Paul George return is imminent. What do we make of them once Paul George returns to the lineup? So stick around for a great podcast, great conversation with those two writers. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, Rohan Nadkarni is back, making his return on the podcast as I make my return to California, recording this on the West Coast this week. Welcome back, California Rohan.
You know, Chris, I like to check in with you at the start of all these podcasts. It's been a while since we've done this, so actually, you know, there's a lot of ways I can take this. Do I want to maybe give the listeners a recap of my time in LA so far? I mostly just want to complain. You know, you're out here. I'm flipping through the radio the other day, and I hear you doing the Rich Eisen show. And I'm like, oh, you know, maybe my buddy Chris could have given me a call. We could have talked about some hoops on the Eisen podcast. But, you know, I guess you had more interesting people to talk to.
Dude, I'm, first of all, fresh off Vegas from the week before. I am just kind of sleepwalking through half of it.
Okay.
And as I was informed out there, and as easy to guess on radio world, Monday's an NFL season, heavy on the NFL.
I see.
So
I see. Makes sense.
I was regaling the audience with my takes on the Cleveland Browns and Lamar Jackson's status in the NFL versus Russell Wilson. So not exactly the most NBA-centric
program. Well, I'm also ready to talk about the Dolphins tank. Whenever you need a Dolphins tanking guy.
Dolphins, Jets, yeah. You know, we can dive into that another time. All right, let's do this because there's a lot to get into today because, you know, I want to start with Houston. And I wrote about the Rockets earlier this week. I talked to Daryl Morey, the general manager in Houston. The Rockets made a big change this offseason. They flipped Chris Paul and a package of draft picks to Oklahoma City for Russell Westbrook. The early returns have been pretty mixed. They're putting up a lot of points. They're giving up a lot of points. Harden and Westbrook are averaging almost 60 points per game, but they're not doing it particularly efficiently. So what do we make of the first couple of weeks of the Houston Rockets?
Okay, so I made like two predictions this summer that I really am kind of trying to stick by. One was I thought Dwight Howard made sense for the Lakers. Here we are. Just going to, you know, pat myself on the back for that one. The other one was the night the Rockets traded for Chris Paul, I honestly thought it was a downgrade. I think in a vacuum, Russell Westbrook is a better player than Chris Paul. His skill set is just so specific that you can't just plug him in on any team and make it work. And we saw this to a degree last year. The Thunder fell apart whenever Paul George wasn't on the court. That was Paul George's team last year. It was not Russell Westbrook's team. There's a reason PG was in the MVP talk. I think this is skewed a little bit by that big Heat loss. The sample size is small, but right now the returns on Russ and Harden playing together are not good. They have a negative net rating when both of them are on the floor together. You know, their offensive rating is a little bit under 107 when they're sharing the court. That's not good. I mean, the Rockets would have a really good offense last year. Harden is playing a lot better when Russ isn't on the floor. And something that was a key to the Rockets' success the last couple of years when they had Chris Paul was when Chris Paul was playing against the backups, he dominated those minutes. The Rockets as a team dominated those minutes. Right now, I had the stat up last night. This is what I do late at night. I watch cooking videos and I look up NBA stats. But you know, the Rockets, I think, have a close to a negative 15 net rating in the minutes that Russell Westbrook is playing and James Harden isn't. It's just, I don't think that he's the right fit. I mean, he's done the little things. He's helped their pace, whatever, you know, some of those scoring numbers. Also helped by the fact that, you know, their pace is up. We're seeing all these hits to James Harden's efficiency. I do think Harden's going to get it going. I don't think he's going to miss 10 three-pointers a game. But how far into the season do we have to wonder, is Russ's presence hurting James's efficiency?
Yeah, on Harden Westbrook, one thing Daryl Morey told me was like, look, if people think that James is going to continue to play like this, then we really are in trouble. Like that's the one thing you can expect to turn around. In the game against Memphis, he shot like 43% from three, so he has started to show some things. But the Westbrook stuff, I mean, I said coming into all this, you've got two alphas, and I don't care how friendly they are or how much they want to play together, the styles just don't seem to mesh. They're just not guys that you would think complement each other all that well at this stage of their career. I mean, they did at one point in Oklahoma City, but back then, James was the guy telling Scott Brooks, I want to be a sixth man. Like, he is now the biggest star, one of the biggest stars in the league, one of the best scorers in the league, a guy being compared by his own GM to Michael Jordan in terms of scoring ability. So it's just an entirely different situation between those two. And when you've got Russ shooting in the mid-20s from three, maybe that improves incrementally, but it's not going to improve significantly. I mean, Russell Westbrook is not going to become a, you know, 35 to 40% three-point shooter at this stage of his career. He's just not. Now, in fairness to Russ, you know, one of the things that Daryl pointed out was that, you know, end-of-game situations, he's been a beast. You know, he has been everything they've asked for and more when it comes to transition. But you can see kind of the disjointedness of that offense when you watch them play every time out. But more than that, I mean, the defense is the biggest issue. I mean, they won a game where they gave up 158 points. Like, they won a game like that. Like, that's wild. Like, they beat Washington.
I mean, that game was absurd. I mean, and it's funny because I was talking to some other people after it because I was like, you know, my Rockets predictions are not looking great. They're winning these games. And it kind of hit me, wait, they gave up 158 points. They didn't just give up 158 points. They gave up 158 points to the Wizards. I mean, outside of Bradley Beal, who's scoring the ball on the Washington Wizards? Like, that was such a red flag. I mean, you saw what the Heat did to them, and, like, I'm sure we'll get to them at some point, but the Heat are not an offensive juggernaut by any means. It went up 32 and a quarter. It was, I do think part of
They had 40. Yeah, they had 46 points in the first quarter of that game.
And I do think that, you know, to Daryl's point, I'm sure he'll say last year they started slow. Last year the defense looked really bad. I mean, granted, I don't think they have a savior coming in like Jeff Bezdelic this year. He's not with the team anymore. But
I'm loving the Jeff Bezdelic savior stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Jeff.
Nothing,
it's just
nothing better happened to him than him being like, I'm going to take the first couple months off.
Yeah.
really improved his
But I'm with you, though. Like, that's, I mean, one thing I asked Daryl, I said, you know, how confident are you that Mike D'Antoni is the guy to turn the defense around? And Mike is a excellent offensive mind, innovative, doing stuff before anyone was doing it in basketball. But defensively, there have been concerns with his teams over the years. And Daryl was quick to point out that 2 years ago, they were a top 10 defense, and they were a 65-win team, top 10 defense. The head coach deserves a ton of credit for that. Last year they slipped, though. They were in the middle of the pack, 17th overall in defensive efficiency. And this year they're like 27, 28. In defensive efficiency, and they don't have that assistant coach in Bezdelic that, you know, that D'Antoni relied on. Elston Turner has taken that role. I just don't know. Like, do I think they'll be 28th in the league in defensive efficiency all year? No, I don't think that. I think Capella can be better defensively. He's been kind of slow-footed out there. I think Eric Gordon can be better defensively. So I think they'll improve, but I don't think they improve into the top half of the league, and that's a problem for that team.
Definitely. And Chris Paul was good at defense, by the way. Like, that's another aspect to this. It wasn't just the fit. Like, he would guard the best backcourt player every night. That's something, you know, Russ and James just don't really do at this point. I mean, our most recent memory of Russ doing that was him going head-to-head with Dame Lillard in the playoffs, and Lillard won that matchup thoroughly. I have a quick – does Daryl Morey – is he just surrounded by bodyguards at all times now? What's going on with Daryl? Is he good? Is he all right?
He seems like he's in a good place right now. He's talking to reporters a lot more and back to being as close to the old Daryl as you can be.
There we go. Okay, good for him.
Yeah, so he's all right. But he might find himself in a tough position when you get to, like, the quarter point of the season. If this team is still hovering around 500 and the trends we've seen in the first 2 weeks continue into, you know, late November, early December, what does he do? Because, you know, they made the decision to not give Mike D'Antoni the contract extension that he wanted this offseason. They offered something that, you know, wasn't great, didn't have as much guaranteed money as Mike wanted. Mike elected, to his credit, to go into the final year of his contract and coach it out. That doesn't work that well oftentimes, that whole lame duck coaching status. And it especially gets problematic if you – you know, if you're struggling, and does the coach have kind of the gravitas in the last year of his deal to get the team to rally around him? So I think that's a variable. So if you get to 20, 25 games during the season, and this team is still hovering around 500 and playing moribund defense, what do you pull the plug on D'Antoni? Do you replace him? You know, part of the reason that they couldn't get the very best of the best on the assistant staff is, you know, why would an assistant staff coach go there if it's just a one-year deal? If you have other options, why would you go to Houston where that job could be as short-term as you can get with that team? Do you replace him with an Elston Turner who hasn't been the answer as far as a defensive coordinator? I just think they may run into some problems in the coaching box if this continues.
They've kind of had a bad cloud hovering around them for a little while. I mean, as successful as they were 2 years ago, and, you know, as much potential as they had to be good again last year, you know, I think their mistake started when they kind of let Trevor Ariza walk. And I know that's strange, but the idea that they weren't going to, you know, pay deep into the luxury tax to keep a 65-win team together always struck me as odd. The fact that they won't extend D'Antoni always struck me as odd. You know, Daryl kind of making these mortgage of the future type trades, and, you know, remember how much he was offering for Jimmy Butler at one point. They just, it seems like they keep springing new leaks, and it doesn't make me very encouraged about their future. The Ty Lue season, I think, is such an outlier. I don't think that you can use that as a historical precedent. If they were to let go of D'Antoni, I don't think they're going to have a shot at winning the West this year. But maybe that's a move you make because you're thinking about the next 2 or 3 years, but I mean, they're in a tough spot with this Russ contract. It's worse than the Chris Paul contract. I don't know. They kind of pushed their chips in to a degree with that trade, and I think they kind of have to find a way to make it work because I don't think the path gets any more clear after this season.
Yeah, I don't know if the Russ contract is worse than Chris's. Chris's goes longer than...
Yeah, I thought Russ's had the extra year.
But... No, I think... I'm pretty sure Chris's goes a year longer than Russ, but... It is problematic. I would say this, and this is like we go going way down the hole in this one, but I think you can probably flip Russ if you had to. I mean, I still look at the Knicks as being a candidate, especially given their point guard struggles all season long. You could put Russ on the Knicks and say, Russ, RJ Barrett, you know, we have no chance until 2021 of getting a top free agent anyway, so let's just roll the dice and try to bring relevance to New York. I could see that happening. I think Capella still has some trade value. I know Boston would jump on him in a heartbeat if they could get, you know, put together some kind of Daniel Theis plus draft picks type of deal for him. So you could deconstruct this roster and rebuild, but they pushed their chips in on Russell Westbrook. Not just flipping Westbrook for Paul, but their 2020 draft capital in the 2020s is a lot of it's tied up in Oklahoma City with picks they gave up and swap rights that they gave up. And that to me is going to, it's confounding a little bit because it speaks to perhaps just how bad it must have been with Chris Paul and James.
It had to be terrible.
And look, yeah. And Vince Goodwill wrote about this at Yahoo, when you know, sort of the dynamic, and it was immediately shot down strongly by the Rockets as being kind of overblown, hyperbolic, and, you know, Chris Paul didn't demand a trade. Whatever the truth, wherever the truth lies there, I mean, for them to break up a team that if you brought it back, given the chemistry of the last 2 years...
Top three in the West.
You would say... And look, chemistry matters when you're putting the team like that together. If you... Breaking up that team, that to me will stand as always kind of the head scratchers, especially when you're bringing in a guy like Russ that independently is great. I have been
the leader of the Russell Westbrook bandwagon. I think the triple-double mark he put up in the last 3 years in Oklahoma City is the Joe DiMaggio of basketball streaks. It is never, ever going to be duplicated. I don't care how many great seasons Ben Simmons has. You're not going to see a player in NBA history average a triple-double for three straight seasons. It's just not going to happen. But pairing him again with James, it just doesn't make a lot of basketball sense. Whereas Chris Paul, even if they may have had some friction, you could see the basketball sense that was made there. They succeeded. 2 years ago, they got to the conference finals. Last year, they advanced in the playoffs. Disappointing ending, but you bring that team back together, and you would think they would have a shot at winning the whole thing.
My favorite Rockets, like, fun fact will always be Paul and Harden were the last team to beat the Warriors when Klay, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Draymond all started together. And that to me was always, they were built to beat that team. I think things kind of got away from them in that game five. They just, those 2 minutes at the end, and they never recovered from that.
No, they didn't. So we'll see what happens out in Houston. They're a fun team to watch with those two guys, but I'm just not sure how it all kind of plays itself out. All right, let's talk briefly about LeBron. I'm going to talk about more about the Lakers a little bit later on in the podcast, but LeBron is kind of in, like, FU mode right now, and it's like a public FU mode.
Oh, no,
I was looking on social media last night, and he's got hashtag Washed King up there with some highlights on it. He seems to have placed a pretty massive chip on his shoulder as a motivating tool at this stage. And look, he's doing things I didn't think he was capable of doing at this stage. Offensively, you expect that. You know, LeBron offensively is still a monster. He is still as good and as dominant as any player in the league offensively. But defensively, he has committed way more this year than he has in the last few years. That's not like, you know, a criticism based on nothing. You see his off-ball defense the last few years. It's been lackluster. The effort just hasn't been there. And I've understood it because of the challenge he's had to take on in Cleveland and last year in L.A. of being the kind of the offensive alpha on those teams. But this year, he's blending them both. He has been great offensively and great defensively, and that's been a big reason they've jumped out to the start they have.
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot from what I've seen from the Lakers so far. I wrote about this, I remember, after Media Day. The team just makes more sense this year. It's not a perfectly built team, but it's built more towards LeBron's sensibility. You have the other star. You have the veterans. That kind of brings the best out of him. I think what I appreciate about Frank Vogel is that he's been flexible. You know, there's been games where he said, this isn't working. We're going to Anthony Davis at center in the second half. I like that he hasn't been, you know, stringent about starting a point guard. He lets LeBron bring the ball up the floor, and they're not kind of, you know, some people say they're hamstringing themselves by playing a center or whatever, but, you know, they're not putting a traditional point guard on the floor just to put a traditional point guard on the floor. I like that aspect. This is the best case scenario season for LeBron that we were all kind of maybe thinking and hoping for in the summer, which is he had a summer of rest. He has people throwing a little dirt on him. Will he come out with something to prove? And he's done that so far. I do think maybe the best thing that happened to the Lakers was that first game against the Clippers, which was a little bit of a wake-up call. Because in the immediate aftermath of that, everyone was saying Kawhi is the best player in the league. You know, Kawhi this, Kawhi that, which Kawhi has earned that. He's also entered the league 8 years after LeBron James. I mean, the fact that LeBron's even being compared to him is in some ways a compliment to LeBron. I'm sure people are going to get on me for that. But I think that game was a little bit of a wake-up call for him. And I think that he has a chance to put together a really special season.
I think LeBron's always kind of bristled at the, you know, Kawhi is sort of a LeBron stopper, which dates back to that last finals that they played in San Antonio, where,
right,
you know, LeBron put up some great numbers in that series, but, like, people looked at Kawhi as, like, they went one-on-one mm-hmm. with Kawhi and the Spurs won, so therefore Kawhi won,
right,
and all that. So I think there's always been kind of a little bit of a connection there. I mean, I just wonder, the question I have is that, is all this sustainable for LeBron over 82?
Right.
And I think offensively it is, because it has in the past. I think defensively, you're going to have to do some load management stuff with him. There's no question. The schedule has been soft. There's no question to start the season. We knew that coming in and how they were going to start. But having Davis beside him seems to have reinvigorated him. I think he's connected pretty well with Frank Vogel, as you pointed out. I think he's, you know, he's a legitimate MVP candidate this year, as long as the Lakers stay in the top half of those standings. Before I move on from L.A., because, like I said, we'll do it a little bit later, the Anthony Davis, like, Chicago stuff. Like, the not the first time he's done this, but Davis, you know, in kind of a Q&A session in Chicago, you know, did not rule out the idea that he could return and play for the Bulls. Davis, of course, from the Chicago area. What do you make of that? Is that just Davis trying to play nice with his hometown? Or if you're, you know, Rob Pelinka, do you stand up and take notice of comments like that?
That is really funny. You know, I don't envy someone like Anthony Davis in this situation. What are you supposed to say? Like, wasn't he in a classroom or something like that?
He was like, yeah, he was. I forget it was a gym.
Right, I want to say there were kids there. What, it's going to ruin all their hopes and dreams and be like, guess, like, it's kind of like that Kyrie Cleveland thing where, you know, all those kids. And he's like, oh, why would I leave? And it's like, what are you going to do? You're going to tell him, no, I'm never going to come back. I do, you know, there's precedent. LeBron set that precedent. He won a couple championships in Miami. Then he went home. I think Anthony Davis's next contract is going to be with the Lakers. Let me put it that way. I do think, is there a chance he returns to Chicago at some point? You know, maybe he only wants to stay with LA as long as LeBron is there. Who knows? I don't think Rob Pelinka has to be worried. You know, the Lakers are playing really well right now. As long as they take care of things on their end, I think they're going to be fine. I just think that Anthony Davis is in a no-win situation. He can't shut the door completely. He also, you know, he can't say, I'd love to come home, because then this conversation happens, but it is funny.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he could have probably softened that a little bit by saying, like, look, I'm in a great situation in Los Angeles. Chicago will always be home for me. You never know what could happen in the future. But his line is like, well, I am a free agent next summer.
That's right.
Like,
it kinda, everyone knows my contract is up.
It kind of like made you sit up. But, I mean, they made so many efforts behind the scenes to make this LA deal happen that – it would have to fall apart significantly, and there would have to be some kind of spark to it to make Anthony Davis want to leave.
There is just a tiny, and this is a bigger conversation that needs to happen, and maybe something that even a story needs to get written about. But are we sure that we know what Anthony Davis wants? Because we've heard a lot from the people around him, and sometimes I just wonder what Anthony Davis's motivation is. Because he seems to get pulled in a lot of different directions. But I think that's something that we'll hopefully find out as the season goes along.
I will say this. Davis seems like the kind of guy that, you know, wants to play in his hometown. Not every player is like that. I mean, Kevin Durant wanted nothing to do with playing in Washington,
right,
you know, because of everything that went into it. Davis doesn't seem bothered by all the things that go into playing in the Chicago area, like LeBron playing back home in Akron. By the way, shout out LeBron for continuing to do insanely cool things
awesome.
In the Akron area, like, you know, housing for some of the students and parents that are going to the I Promise School. I mean, you know, you can critique LeBron, the basketball player, and that's fair game, of course, but LeBron, the human, is pretty awesome. Like, the things he's done, you know, and Twitter being, like, such a cesspool. Like, you know, I tweeted out something, like, the link to, I think Jeff Zilga from USA Today wrote the story, and, like, people are like, well, is he paying for all this, or is the city or state paying for
right
all? Like, give me a break.
Come
like,
on.
The guy,
yeah, yeah.
The guy is as single-handedly spearheaded all this stuff
he's done with education and the involvement he's had with kids from such a young age is remarkable. It really is remarkable.
I mean, before you criticize LeBron, you go out and build a school, all right? Show me what you've done that's on that level that LeBron's done. All right, let's talk about Mike Conley for a second. This Mike Conley to Utah deal was one of the most talked about in the offseason because it was the deal that put the Jazz in the conversation to win not just the Western Conference, maybe the NBA championship. Like, Conley was looked at as a missing link there. He's still a high-level point guard. He was an accomplished perimeter player to take pressure off of Donovan Mitchell. The narratives were all there. And he's come out, Rohan, in the first, you know, 7-8 games of the season, and aside from, like, one half against the Clippers, has basically laid an egg. Like, he has been really bad. I mean, what color is the Mike Conley threat alert to you right now?
It's not good. I mean, so Utah's come to Staples a couple times now, and I've been really disappointed in the way they played both times, particularly against a Clippers team. You know, if we're talking about the Jazz as contenders and they're playing the Clippers without Paul George, I don't care if it's on the road. That's a game Utah should win. If Utah is taking itself seriously as a contender, that's the kind of game they should win. You know, I was trying to write a story on the Jazz, trying to write a story on Conley, actually, but he was struggling, so I held back, and I was trying to get a sense from the Jazz, when are you guys going to become the measuring stick? You know, Utah, you play a team like the Lakers, you play a team like the Clippers. Those guys are always looked at as the teams you measure yourself against in the conference. Utah should be one of those teams with Mike Conley, but it just hasn't happened. You know, watching him up close a couple times, you know, obviously he had his injury issues in Memphis. He's getting a little bit older. So I don't know if it is just purely, hey, he's still figuring it out. I mean, you remember in Memphis, His pick and roll chemistry with Marc Gasol, for example, was incredible. It takes a long time to build something like that back up. But then you watch him, like, you know, some of his jumpers are short. He can't quite finish in the rim anymore as well as he used to, or in the lane, I should say. And those are kinds of the things that catch up to you as you get older. So it's still too early for me to say, he's not going to be the Mike Conley of the past. He does strike me as the kind of guy who would defer so much that would take him out of his own rhythm. I'm sure that he doesn't want to take away from what Donovan Mitchell is doing. But I expected him to be a huge piece for that team. I mean, he changes so much about their offense. And it's been tough to watch at times. And I'm a little disappointed in the Jazz's start, because I think they should be one of those measuring stick teams in the West. And I thought they should have had that game against the Clippers. If Paul George isn't playing and you're at full strength, how are you not winning this game?
Yeah, but look, if the threat level is like yellow, orange, red, I'm still sticking to yellow right now. I'm still low on this. If this was last year and Mike Conley was coming off that injury-riddled season, it would be red at this point. I would say, well, the foot injury is taking something away from him. All the things you're talking about, you can chalk up to a smaller player dealing with a significant foot injury, and maybe he's never going to be the same. But he came back last year and played like an all-star level player. Like he looked really good in the time he spent in Memphis last year. And look, adjusting to a new team, to your earlier point, is difficult for a point guard. And I was reading some of the research that SLCDunk.com did, the SB Nation blog out in Utah, and they, you know, point out some of the numbers Ricky Rubio had last year to start the season. His first 14 games, under 14 points, 37% from the floor, 25% from three, average almost four turnovers a game. And then they went even further and expanded on some of the other top-tier point guards and their early returns with their new teams, Chris Paul, Kyrie Irving, even Kemba Walker this season in Boston. I mean, I watched Kemba in the first, you know, few games with the Celtics, and he was just kind of a little lost out there as Kemba was trying to figure out. And I talked to Kemba about this because he was still trying to find out, should he be the Kemba in Charlotte or should he be this new version of Kemba Walker with this team? It took him some time and still taking him some time. So I think that's something that when it comes to Mike Conley, I mean, he spent virtually his entire career playing a very specific style. It was grindhouse. It was, you know, slow the game down basically and play pick and roll with Mark and Zach Randolph and guys like that. This is a different team. His running buddy for a lot of those years was Tony Allen. Now it's Donovan Mitchell. There's just a very different dynamic in play. I just have too much faith both in Mike Conley and in that system they have in Utah. I mean, Quinn Snyder's awesome. That's a bunch of guys that are dynamic. I just think they'll figure it out. I think they'll find a way to get it, and he'll play a lot better.
You convinced me a little bit. You came with some good information there. I like that a lot, Chris. Every now and then I'm reminded.
Bring in the stats.
I will say, I think you brought up, like, the Kemba thing is a really good example. I hope it works out. It just really bothered me because, you know, I'm looking at the Clippers right now, and they're like this little, like, you know, juggernaut in the making, and they don't have Paul George yet. And some of these teams that I'm, you know, the Lakers fall into that category too. If you aren't beating the Clippers now, I mean, what's going to happen when Paul George comes back? It's just something for me that's like a little underrated storyline of this season is, hey, this team's going to get a lot better. So, like, if you're a team like Utah, you also got to get it clicking, you know, pretty soon. But I'm willing to give Mike Conley time. I think he's a great player. I don't think he's just going to have lost it overnight. So I hope they figure it out, because that's a really fun team on paper if they can get it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I still look at them as a real threat to get to the conference finals this year. I mean, there's still too much time for him to figure it out and get better.
Did you have you placed your Gordon Hayward MVP bet yet, by the way?
Gordon Hayward the other night. Oh,
he's looking good this season.
Awesome. Physically, you knew in the Celtics training camp that he was all the way back because everyone was talking about it. Like, you know, Brad Stevens was like, that's the old Gordon. And watching him go through practices and preseason stuff, you could see it. He's not hesitant anymore. And you saw flashes of it at the end of last year when he started to go to the free throw line a lot, which is like a big indicator for him. But, you know, the game against Cleveland when he had, 39, like his rhythm is coming back as well. And look, not to go into a Boston topic here, but they're going to be a better regular season team than most people expected because they're just going to have good chemistry and they'll score a lot of points.
If they had somehow managed to keep Aaron Baines.
Yeah, and to be clear, they couldn't. They had no, to get Kemba, they had to gut that team.
You mentioned Capella. If they get a center,
That's exactly it. Like, if they can find a way to get a five-man like Capella or maybe even Marc Gasol.
Just someone defensive-minded.
Right,
someone
without having to give up any of their core, they could make some noise in the conference playoffs because Tatum is going to get even better. Brown, I thought, has been really good for that team. Smart still there. Kemba is – you know, if he was just flipping Kemba for Kyrie, I'd say – they'd be the favorite to win the Eastern Conference, but all the front court depth that they lost. I'll be interested to see if Danny can pull off some kind of trade for Capella or Gasol or somebody like that to fortify that front line. But it's good to see Gordon, you know, as he – Gordon, by the way, entering kind of one of those option years in his contract.
Yeah, he's got an interesting future. I mean, people have talked about him as a trade chip. I'm curious if they would consider.
Well, I mean, he's got a big number attached to him. But that would be such a – I mean, the guy comes to Boston, such, you know – such fanfare to play for his former coach. He breaks his leg on the first day and then has to go through all last season like that. That's tough. That's tough to have turn on trip. But I wonder if he'd opt out of the contract, you know, $34 million in the final year of his deal. Does he look for long-term security after playing 1 year, or does he come back on the last year of that deal? Because he'd be an interesting free agent the summer of 2020.
Yeah.
Like, because there's not a lot of guys out there that'd be unrestricted on that market. So we'll have to see. But you have to be 100% sure that he'd have real money on the table. All right, as we look at the top of the conference standings, some interesting teams right now residing there, and it is early, but I'm looking at Miami sitting up there at or near the top of the Eastern Conference standings, and I'm looking out west, and I'm seeing Phoenix sitting out there at the top of the standings.
Big matchup between the Heat and Suns coming up this week, too.
Heat and Suns.
Finals preview.
Potential finals preview. More surprising, I'll ask you that, but more surprising start. Miami or Phoenix?
I mean, it has to be Phoenix. I'm not going to go full Heat homer. I'm not entirely surprised at their start. Phoenix, though. I mean, I did the entertainment rankings for SI this year. I had them at the bottom of the league because I'm like, they just lose. All they do is lose. It's not fun watching their games. Every time they win, I'm shocked. They have been good and they have been fun. Aaron Baines has been great for them. Ricky Rubio has been great for them. Kelly Oubre.
I watched a game, by the way, the other night where I think Aaron Baines set like 900 screens.
Someone said he set a screen on every offensive possession.
He was just screening everybody.
I tweeted that out. Yeah, I mean, they tried to do this a little bit last year where they brought in some veterans and, you know, try to make things more competent, and it just didn't stick. And it's working now. Kelly Oubre, I'm not saying he's going to become a star and all sort of thing, but he's making a little bit of a jump. Side story, something we need to talk about at one point is the Wizards getting rid of Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre, and Satoransky, and just not having anything to show for it. But the Suns look good, man. They're fun. I'm happy for Devin Booker because I've been a critic of his. I do think if you're that kind of player, you need to impact winning. But they finally put a competent team around him, and they're doing a good job. I mean, and it's contributions from all over the roster. You know, it's funny. I was watching the game the other night against the Sixers. You see Tyler Johnson come in from the bench, and, you know, they give up one easy basket, and he's calling a defensive huddle, and he's like, guys, like, let's get this back together. I think they have a lot of good people in that locker room. I'm incredibly happy for Monty Williams, who I think has already got to be in the Coach of the Year talk. They are easily the more surprising team, and I've been genuinely impressed with the way they've played.
Yeah.
And they've beaten some good teams. They beat Philly, no Embiid. They beat Clippers. It's a fun team.
Yeah, Phoenix is by far the more surprising. I think a lot of people had Miami kind of pegged in and around that playoff mix. I don't think anybody had Phoenix in that mix. And then Ayton goes out with that suspension, and, you know, all of a sudden you think they're just going to go into a free fall. I credit Monty Williams, too. I was disappointed that they fired Igor last year after just one season on the job.
That whole thing was a disaster.
I mean, that was, to me, I'm like, yeah.
Hiring him, not drafting Luka, it was weird.
I mean, you had a guy in Igor, though, that at the time was looked at as the elite assistant coach. He was on Quinn Snyder's staff, and you give him 1 year on the job. That didn't make a ton of sense to me. But they turned around and were able to get Monty Williams, and Monty Williams is as respected as they get in the coaching ranks. I think Monty's had an impact on that roster, especially on Devin Booker. I mean, Devin Booker for the last – how is Devin Booker in year five? He's 23 years old. How is he in year five? Like, this is – but Devin Booker the last 4 years – you looked at him as being just one-dimensional. Like, could he be, you know, they give him all that money, and the question became, could he become a two-way player? And a lot of the scouts and coaches I talked to just said no. Like, he'll always be a great scorer, but he'll never become a two-way player. And I think watching him this year, he at the very least is trying to become a two-way player. He is giving more of an effort on the defensive end than I've seen at any point in his career, and that's a step in the right direction. The other part of it is, he's not having to do everything. I mean, how many years in a row has Phoenix just like, you know, had a cycle of point
right.
guards there?
Right.
I mean, just and not I mean, good no, ones.
And the thing is, last year it's like not even real point guards.
No,
just guys who are short. And to your point about Devin
guys
Booker,
who are short. Yeah, just.
To your point about Devin Booker on defense, by the way, because some people say, you know, why don't you guys like try hard on both ends? Why isn't everyone a two-way player? When you have the scoring burden of someone like Devin Booker, it's not easy to also play defense. That's why you have James Harden when his usage rate is so high. It's not easy, and people don't realize that. It's once you start giving more on one end, it takes away from the other. And like you're saying, like they actually have a roster that makes sense now, which makes his life easier, which means he can do more things on the court.
Yeah, and look, the roster makes sense too because Ricky Rubio is there, and Rubio has become the point guard that they've needed to take that pressure off of Devin Booker. I mean, there were stretches the last couple of years where Devin Booker was the point guard, and he's asked to be a playmaker and a scorer. Now Rubio comes in, and for all his flaws as a shooter, he is an excellent playmaker. He runs the floor extremely well. His strengths are always going to be there. His weaknesses are always going to be there. But those strengths, I think, have really complemented Devin Booker and made his life so much easier in the offensive end. You talk about how the stress of playing defense, but the stress of having to like kind of create your own offense
yeah.
is enormous. And Rubio's kind of taken some of that away. You couple that with the fact that Baines, who I watched in Boston the last couple of years, is a bone-crunching screener. Like he is as good as they get at setting screens in the NBA. And you've got a good blend of talents. Now, I don't think that they're not a playoff team. Like that's just yeah. I mean they'll come back down. I mean Booker
right.
is gonna he'll eventually have some of his struggles.
People will stop sleeping on them.
Yeah,
too.
You'll take them more seriously as the season goes on. But you know, even if they're just like a 9-10, that's a huge step in the right
good
direction.
For them, man.
Like that's
good for them.
That's progress.
And all Phoenix fans have the right to like rub my face in the dirt because I was really wrong on them, but they've been killing it.
Now Miami's a little bit more interesting because the question with Miami is not now, are they a playoff team? Because they probably are, barring an injury. But are they a contending team right now with that group? And the surprises that we've seen, one was Tyler Herro, who we kind of saw coming in the preseason with way shooting. I mean, he's 19 years old, and he's just you know scoring like close to 30 in some games. So he's been excellent. And then you got Kendrick Nunn, who wins the Hassan Whiteside, where the fuck did you come from award?
Right.
Like Kendrick Nunn, I had to like Google like his. I was on his
yeah.
basketball reference page looking up all his transactions,
right,
like where
yeah.
he came from in this league. But this is kind of what Miami does. They
Chris
identify
Silva as well. Chris
yeah, they identify yeah. talent, and then they mine that talent. They did it with Hassan Whiteside. They made a huge splash, a huge hit with Tyler Herro, and now they get Kendrick Nunn, who comes in there and is giving them really good production for that team. Like, I'd have to see more of Nunn and Herro playing
right.
over the course of a season. But you know, you couple that with Butler, who we know we can perform in the playoffs, is an alpha. And Butler, I was reading a story Chris Haynes did recently over Yahoo, and Butler was just gushing over Nunn and Tyler. Like he was very effusive in his praise. Like those guys are dogs. Like they're like me. They've got mm-hmm. like some of that in me. So like the chemistry is there with that team. And I don't know. I mean, if those two players can continue this trend, I won't put them on that Philadelphia and Milwaukee tier because that's the top tier in the West, but they're right there below it. Like they can compete with Boston and Brooklyn and those other teams
Toronto,
out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I mean, I always looked at them in that 3-4 range, and I'm higher on the Heat than most people every year.
Dwayne Wade's not coming back.
I know
so
Dwayne Wade's
clear.
Not coming back. I know. But,
second
you know,
to last
I'm,
dance.
I'm going to buy his socks or whatever whenever
that's,
those come out. Yeah.
I have no doubt.
Here's what I'll say. It's funny because, you know, Nunn has struggled the last couple games, and, you know, they got a little bit of a wake-up call in Denver on Tuesday night, although that's always a tough place to
Denver
play.
Denver always. Like yeah. Denver's like second to Miami
yeah.
because of South Beach.
Right.
Denver's somebody has a stat. Maybe it was Rachel Nichols that put this stat up there about how teams that play Sunday, in,
Sunday
Miami,
in Miami,
it's just like
yeah, chalk it up to
it's them. Like that's a gambling paradise.
Yeah.
Like bet on Miami
right.
if you have a home game on Sunday.
I actually want to see the Heat go in a little bit of a different way. Right now they have this whole egalitarian kumbaya thing going. One night Nunn's going off for 20, one night it's Herro. I would actually like to see Jimmy take a little bit more control of the team. He didn't have a great game in Denver either. I do think but there needs to be a little bit more of a trickle down in Miami right now, actually. I'm just actually weirdly a little nervous about the idea of the guys they have there right now, you know, performing like this throughout a season. I do think Jimmy at some point will need to take more control. But they just – another team that makes a lot more sense now. I think people have kind of slotted into their roles. Justice Winslow is, you know, running the offense as the way he should be. They have, you know, that wing scorer in Jimmy that they haven't had the last couple of years. They also made – and I've brought up this point so many times over the last years. They made an addition by subtraction move, swapping Whiteside for Bam Adebayo. I mean, Bam right now, he's I think 5.2 assists per game heading into that, you know, matchup against Denver. That's incredible. I mean, he makes so much more sense for the offense. You talk about someone, a willing screen setter. That is so important at that position. Myers Leonard's giving them good stretch minutes. They just have a roster that makes a lot more sense, a lot more balance than they've had the last few years after Riley was kind of handing out all those contracts and telling Spo to figure it out. So I think they're going to be a really good regular season team just because they've a roster with well-defined roles and a good coach.
Yeah, they can win a first-round series. The question is going to be, can all these young guys compete against a veteran team like Philadelphia, right, an experienced team now like Milwaukee? That's something I think is a bridge too far. But this, I always say to people, like, this is how you win. Like, it's not, you know, tanking and getting number one. It's finding the Tyler Herros or the Devin Bookers even of the world at the back end of the lottery. It's identifying Hassan Whiteside first and Kendrick Nunn next. Like, this is how you win. Like, you find these guys, and it's tough. It's tough to identify where these guys came from. So we'll see what happens with Miami, but I'm bullish on them being a top kind of 4-5 playoff seed in the East. Rohan, always appreciate it, man. Good to see you out here in California. I'm sure you're enjoying yourself. Or do you like Muscle Beach every weekend? Is that kind
of
what you're...
Yeah, you know, just I wear a lot of tank tops now that have photos of sunsets on them.
That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, a lot
That's
of nice. Green juices.
Oh, yeah, a lot of green juices
yeah,
out here.
Yeah. Just start calling people bra.
Griping about the traffic.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. You know, I hit a little bit of traffic trying to get to the hotel today, Chris.
I hear you,
you know,
man. I hear
you're
you.
Trying to get onto Flower Street. There's just a huge line of cars. Like, what are you going to do, though, you know?
Well, I appreciate you making the way in here, man.
Yeah, anytime, man.
All right, Arash Markazi is here, columnist from the LA Times. Just spent a couple minutes yapping to me about his gripes with the Logan Paul.
I don't have a gripe with
you,
it.
You
oh
have
my
gripes.
God, now
you're
we're
just
no. I am fine with anything, any form of entertainment. I like pro wrestling. That shows you my barometer.
You do like pro wrestling.
So I'm fine with it. I get why a boxing purist would have a problem, but I know that's another podcast. You have several podcasts.
I do.
This is not the boxing podcast.
I just, you know, and I'm just trying to give you airtime everywhere I go. Like this week's
what? I appreciate that, Mannix.
Throwing you on the Rich Eisen show there, bringing you on there just so I could knock your suit.
That
you know,
is
your
true.
Suit game. That was kind of like an extra icing on the cake for
that
me
was
there.
Good.
But it's an interesting time in Los Angeles with the Lakers and the Clippers, more relevant than they've been together since, what, the last hallway series that they played, and God, was that almost 20 years ago now?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long time ago when Sean Livingston was a member of the Clippers.
But they never played in the playoffs. They Didn't almost they? Played. Yeah, they
but,
almost right, played.
But they were good. Like, that was
yeah.
the last time they were
but
really
good
together. But
I guess the difference here is if they had met that year, it would have been two teams that no one would have expected a ton from. In 2006, like, it would have been a huge upset for the Lakers to beat the Suns, and no one – those were two okay teams. For the first time coming into the season – according to Vegas, according to the sports books, you got the top two teams in the league. And for the first time in franchise history, the Clippers, according to some odds makers, are the favorites. They've never been in that position. As good as Lob City was, and I covered them pretty much daily, they were, in my view, always the fifth best team. Mm. There's some people who think that they should have gone to the finals. I never thought they were one of the top two teams in the West. During that period of time, they were never the number one or two seed. So just by that alone, they were a good team. But for the first time, the Clippers are a championship contender, and so are the Lakers.
Okay, then let's compare the two for a second. Yeah. Use that as kind of a jumping off point. Buy or sell the Lakers as a definite championship contender?
When you talk about two of the top five players in the league, and I really felt going into this season, LeBron was...
That's usually a one-word answer on that one first. Then you can go into your...
Oh, you said a one-word answer?
But no, I said buy or sell. Lakers as a definite
but buy.
Champion.
I didn't hear buy. The buy or sell part.
Well, I mean,
I'm
you know,
sorry.
As a reporter, you
I'm
should
really,
listen more.
I rarely, if ever, pay attention to what you're saying. This podcast is forcing me to do so, so apologies. Definite buy. Listen, LeBron coming into the season for the first time in, I guess, 9 years, just like was off. He had not played since March. So he comes in healthy and has something to prove. I think LeBron's, as you know, one of these players that if he has a chip on his shoulder, and usually if you're as good as LeBron, you don't have a chip on your shoulder, but everyone's saying, oh, he's not as good, he's washed up, whatnot.
That, well, I would, let me just, and I did, yeah, this, sure. I did this earlier with Rohan Nadkarni. We talked a little bit about LeBron as an MVP candidate. LeBron keeps playing this kind of washed card.
He needs to, in his mind.
Who called him that?
No, I don't. Somebody may have on Twitter that he looked up.
Okay, that doesn't count.
I agree.
I've been called, like, I think I've been called every four-letter word.
Tom Brady does this, too. This whole, like, you're old, you're washed up, you're done. I mean, like, he's generally regarded as the GOAT.
Look,
like, there's no one who thinks Tom Brady is garbage.
Well, no, but here's what I would say, though. Like, you go back to, and I'm close to this in Boston, but you go back to some of the national, like Max Kellerman saying,
okay,
he's
that was. I bet you one person said LeBron was washed, and I don't know who. I don't know who said it. I bet you someone did, and he heard
I'd like
it.
Somebody
and that's
ask
all he
him,
needed.
Like, because you know, look, if the critique of LeBron is that he's been one-dimensional, I think that's fair. I think in the last 3 or 4 years, he has not been anywhere close to the defensive presence he's been in his prime years because he's had to commit so much to offense, so he had to take some time off on the defensive end of the floor. He is. The first 7-8 games of the season, whatever it is, as we record this, he has been the complete player. So I my pushback is that, like, he's doing this washed king thing.
Guys need that. I think some guys, whether it's created or fabricated or one random talk show host somewhere said it and that he'll use that, that's fine. But you talk about two of the top five players in the league. And I think Anthony Davis, we kind of forgot how great he was. There was a period of time there where he could have been the best player in the league, but he got hurt and he demanded a trade and yada, yada, yada. He's a top five player. So you got two of the top five players on this team. And the guys that you thought had to play well for them to succeed have. Dwight Howard coming off the bench. Maybe Kyle Kuzma gets healthy. And Green and Rajon Rondo when he's back. I mean, the pieces are fitting. It's at the beginning of the season, so we'll see. But definite championship contender.
Yeah, I mean, I was asked early in the preseason, did I see the Lakers as more likely to miss the playoffs than win a championship? And, you know, that's been completely misinterpreted by the internet. I mean, it's like, you know, like Laker fans on Twitter have taken that and just run with it. But look, I think it was fair to say at that time that it was more like they missed the playoffs than win a championship just because there are so many question marks. Now, some of those questions have been answered. I mean, I'm not ready to buy stock in Dwight Howard just yet.
Yeah.
I need to see more than, you know, an eighth of the season or whatever it is. But he seems to be willing to accept that role. And he seems to be thriving in that role. Yeah. Danny Green is like a modern-day Robert Horry. He is. Like, you put him on any team, and he'll make them better.
He's a
like
perfect addition for that
he
team.
Will just,
yeah.
He will make shots. He will defend. He is worth every nickel of that $14 million that they're paying him. I would like to see them do this against good teams.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I'm not going to throw a parade because they beat the Bulls. I'm not going to get giddy because they beat the Hornets. I'm not going to jump out of my seat because they beat the Grizzlies. I think we said, and I'm sure you looked at the schedule too coming in, like they should be like 9-2 against this group or 8-3 or whatever it is. If the fact that they're doing that says that they're on the right track, but I want to see what happens as we get close to Christmas and that schedule toughens up a little bit.
Lakers Twitter, and you know a lot about this, the Lakers have not been good during this kind of height of Twitter. So for the first time, they could actually enjoy this moment as being like perhaps the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. We'll see. They've missed the playoffs the last 6 years. They have not won a playoff game in 7 years. So that's basically the majority of the time we've had Twitter. So listen, I know it's the beginning of the season, but Lakers fans have been hoping and praying for this moment for quite some time. Just look in the standings and say the number one team in the league as we record this is the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah, and one thing I'm curious about is how does Frank Vogel handle kind of the load management with LeBron?
Yeah.
Because, you know, at some point, you've got to sit him down. I mean, we're sitting here midweek. Kawhi Leonard's not going to play or didn't play as we record this against the Bucks on Wednesday night. You got to do something similar with LeBron at this stage. He just can't. I know he wants to play every minute of every game, but you got to save the guy from himself at some point.
And speaking of Frank Vogel, Chris, we talked about last season's team being a combustible roster. I thought this was a combustible coaching staff. They did not allow Frank Vogel to just bring in his guys. And to his credit, and you've talked about it he's just a fantastic coach. And what is not talked about enough, just because Luke Walton was such a well-liked guy in Los Angeles, how much improved the coaching staff is and how much improved this team is, certainly defensively, with Frank as the coach. And LeBron does have respect for him. Listen, Frank has not won a championship, but he's gone against him in the conference finals, and he knew what a kind of a coach he was. And so not enough has been talked about him coming in and really improving this team.
You know, I was talking to some coaches in the last couple of weeks that have coached LeBron in the past, and one thing they told me when I asked the question of, you know, what's the secret to coaching this guy, first thing that always came up was match his preparation, match his intensity, you know, match his kind of work ethic for the job. And I kind of relayed that to Rick Pitino recently, and Rick Pitino, who, of course, was the first guy to hire Frank Vogel at Kentucky, and Rick said, you're not going to out-prepare Frank. Like, he's just one of the smartest guys you're going to come across who works as hard as anybody in the game. So as long if that's kind of in sync, then I think you've got a pairing that can be successful. But if you're looking at – if you have a question about the Lakers as we get into the next 2 months of the season, in the teeth of the season, what is it? Is it LeBron's health? Is it the ability of them to make perimeter shots? I mean, what's your biggest question about the Lakers?
Well, the perimeter shots will be. And then, so, you know, when you talk about guys like, well, we're going to depend on Caruso or
Caldwell Pope is there.
You know, guys, so, yeah. Who's the third guy? Because you do know, whether it's load management or just guys getting hurt, who's going to be that third guy on a night when LeBron will have to sit or not play? Will that be Kyle Kuzma? Will that be someone else? I think Kuzma could be that player. We'll see. But that's my biggest question, because they will have to go through a stretch at some point, whether it's by choice or not, where they don't have one or both of their top two guys. Who's that third guy?
Do you think that being in the same market, the same city as Kawhi Leonard is a motivating factor for LeBron? Because it's, you know, people look at Kawhi as being what LeBron once was, in a way, like, you know, a guy that can quite literally carry a team to a championship. He did that with Toronto last year, and as you pointed out, they're kind of being anointed in Los Angeles or across the league as the heir. Do you think that kind of sharing that hallway, you know, is goosing LeBron at all?
It creates a fun dynamic, because when you talk about the best player, if it's not LeBron, the majority of people say it's Kawhi, just because of what he did in the playoffs and what he was able to do. The other kind of interesting dynamic for LeBron is it's not just Kawhi. If you look at the last two summers, the Lakers wanted to sign Paul George. They wanted that to be the second guy. Paul George chose not to. Now, he, the next summer, chose and said, I would like to play for the Clippers. Kawhi had that chance. So you're talking about two guys in Kawhi and Paul George that had the chance, the choice, and they both chose to skip and not play with LeBron. And these are two guys who grew up in Los Angeles or Southern California. They know the history of Kobe and Shaq and Magic and Kareem and the Lakers and all that. And so I'd be curious, because LeBron, you know, generally, you know, does, if he wants to play with someone, he's a pretty engaging guy. So those were two guys who, for whatever reason, said, you know what, with all due respect, no thanks.
So
that's
what's
kind of
your,
interesting.
What's your early return then on the Clippers? Because they stormed out of the gates pretty fast. They took a loss, two losses here, there. They're going to get Paul George back sometime in the next week, it seems like. What's your early read on how they're playing?
You know, people are surprised by the load management thing at the beginning of the season. And I say, listen, there is no chance Kawhi is going to be playing more than 65 games. That's like on the high end. Maybe 67. I mean, it'll be in the 60s. I just think when you look at what they did with Toronto and that work, like, that was going to continue. And when you look at the way the league has responded, that should show you that there is something there. I think the Clippers shared with the league, listen, here's the issue with his knee. It's okay to play, but I mean, we're not going to push him. And whatever the Clippers provided the league was sufficient enough for them to continue this. I don't think it's a problem. Once they get Paul George back, one of those two guys, I mean, that'll be a fun dynamic, and it'll really help them come playoff time. Because if you look at the Clippers, it's night and day than it was before, but for whatever reason, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin would break down in the playoffs. They would always get hurt in the playoffs. So I think now you have a dynamic where you talk about two guys who are going to play 60-some games and be relatively fresh in the playoffs. And they don't have to have the one seed. They can get the two seed or the three seed or whatnot. But they're going to have two of the top 10 players, and they're going to be in a fantastic position.
Yeah, I would say this too, and I saw a lot of backlash on social media to Kawhi sitting out
another national game, this time against Milwaukee. Of course, everybody wants to see Kawhi go up against Giannis in a regular season game. But, you know, to those people, like, too bad. Like we just saw a year ago the end result. I mean, what did he miss, 22 games last year with Toronto? They won a championship because of it. And I think that load management had a lot to do with it. I mean, I saw Kendrick Perkins on social media kind of, you know, saying that, you know, Kawhi shouldn't be missing games. Hire a personal trainer, you know, hire your own guys to keep you fresh. That's not really how it works. When you have a legitimate injury like he's had, I mean, that knee is a real thing. That quadricep, that knee is a real thing. You got to manage that. And if it means you don't wind up as the number one seed in the Western Conference and Kawhi misses 20-something games, so what? Big deal.
I will say the Clippers are the one team that I'm not very sympathetic about the whole if you bought a ticket to a game, unless if you traveled. But if you're in Los Angeles, if you live in Los Angeles, this really goes to the fact that there's so many, you know, teams here. But you could walk up on StubHub and get a $6 ticket to walk in to a Clippers game.
I think I was looking tonight as we record this on Wednesday, $8.
So what I'm saying is you don't have to buy your tickets a month in advance for a top dollar. Wait till the Clippers will usually let you know the day before. And so wait until the day of, by the way, something may come up in your life where you decide you don't want to go to the game that night. But the fact of the matter is the Clippers in this town still, if you wake up one morning and Kawhi's playing and Paul George is playing and you're free, you can go on StubHub and depending on who they're playing, get a $6 ticket, a $9 ticket to go watch them play.
Why is that still?
They still have not I'm trying to think how to explain it. I mean,
are they the Chargers of the LA?
They're not as bad as the Chargers. No, listen, they've been in this city for 35 years. They really did an amazing job this summer, and I think it'll help when they move into their new facility, which looks like it'll happen at some point. You don't reverse 30 years of mismanagement in a few years. And I know that they've been good for more than a few years. But championships are the only currency that matters in this town. And so as good as they were during that period with Chris and Blake, the fact that they always lost in the first or second round did not help them. It's going to take time. You could not do what Donald Sterling did with this team for 30 years and just say, we're going to flip the switch. If they win a championship, that's going to help. Getting Kawhi and Paul George, that's huge. Getting your own facility, that's big. These are big steps. So the Clippers can and will be successful here, but it's just going to be hard for them to be like the Lakers, because even when the Lakers are bad, cheapest tickets, like $60. And because it's the Lakers, it's the Yankees, it's the Cowboys. I mean, it's something that you want to see. So it's going to take time. It's not like it was before. The Clippers are very sensitive when I talk about this. I'm like, it's totally different than what it was before. But the fact of the matter is, again, Chris Paul's coming to town. When the Thunder come to town, $6 ticket. If you want to sit in a suite, because those suites are prepaid, $25 can get you in a suite. So, which is, by the way, a great thing if you're a family of four. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a fantastic deal. But it is what it is, and because of that, I'm not too sympathetic, because don't purchase your tickets in advance. Wait till the night of.
That's a good point. I didn't really think that deep. But you're right about the tickets being good for families. I mean, I wrote a long time ago about Madison Square Garden. Even when the Knicks are bad, you got a family of four paying like $2,000 plus when you factor in parking and everything that goes into going to a game at the Garden, sitting in a decent seat. That's rough. Last thought on the Clippers. I'd actually think, you know, for them to really solidify themselves as the front runners, I think they need one more piece. I think it's something that has to come on the buyout market, most likely, because they've given everything away.
Iguodala thing is going to be interesting, because both teams in Los Angeles think that they are in a good position for him. Now, I think it'll come down to when he actually does get his buyout, does he get his release.
I'm not sure he's going to get a buyout. I think somebody's going to make a deal for him.
But which team needs him more? Does something
happen? I'd say the Lakers need him more.
Yeah, I would agree, and I think the Lakers want him, and they kind of feel that they will at some point get him. But, the buyout market is perfect for both of those teams. You're in Los Angeles, you're championship contenders. I mean, this is like the perfect place for a guy who's like at the end of his career or looking to make a run at one title or something like that. So you know that that's going to happen.
Who wins the battle for? If they're both jockeying for, I would think the Lakers offer more of an opportunity to play maybe, although Iguodala could be a two in
yeah.
in Los Angeles with the Clippers. Like, and I'd say, too, like, could you resist a phone call from LeBron? A lot of people have, you know, yeah. in the last couple of years. But I think that if I'm the Clippers, I'm looking at front court first and foremost. I'm just kind of hoping that Phoenix fizzles out and, like, Aaron Baines becomes yeah. available. Like, just some kind of bone-crunching screener who, you know, who just, you know, is just a professional that just rebounds, can make perimeter shots. Like, that's, I think that's the type of player the Clippers need. Whereas the Lakers, they're flush with bigs. They could use a wing yeah. or two, some kind of defensive stopper to bolster that defense down the line.
As you know, though, the Clippers have just been so smart with every move that they've made with Doc and Lawrence Frank and Jerry West and Trent Redden and everyone that they have. Just they've made all the smart choices, whether it's a trade or whether it's a look into the future. So whatever move that they make, I'm fairly confident it'll be a good move, just because they've just done such a good job over the past year here.
Last thought on the Lakers, and I asked Rohan this, so I'll put this to you as well. Any concern when you see Anthony Davis talking to media in Chicago about, hey, you know, you never know what can happen, guys?
I thought that, yes, here's the thing. He's so, there's no filter with him, which I like and I've enjoyed so far talking to him. But yeah, I mean, that's a question that, why even, like, why talk about that? You know the way social media is going to respond to that. You know the way Chicago is going to respond. And everyone with the Lakers in Los Angeles are still a little, sensitive. Like, the whole Dwight thing, when he was traded here and everyone thought he was going to resign and did not. But, yeah, why even talk about that? That makes zero sense. Say, listen, I love Chicago.
You think there could be something to it, though?
I am never 100% confident until the guy signs, right? So I think the different dynamic here is this is LeBron's team, Rich Paul's team. Their fingerprints are all, like, and by the way, and I say that complimentary. I think the Lakers are finally a championship contender because of LeBron, because of Rich Paul, because of that they chose to make this home, right? And so, and I think because of that, this was a long-term play. So I don't think he's off to Chicago or somewhere else.
Just weird hearing him say, you know, I'm a free agent next summer. You never. And if you're the Lakers, like, and look, I would take a strong failure. Something bad would have to happen for Anthony Davis to walk away. But if he ever did, I mean, I don't know how you recover from that, given what the Lakers gave up
to get him. That's the issue. Because with Dwight, people forget, in the big scheme of things, they did not lose a ton. If you just break down that trade now, it wasn't like they gave up a ton. That is not the case with Anthony Davis. They gave up the farm and the cows
swap
and the
rights,
horses. And
yeah,
like, I mean, they
every young player on the roster.
They
that
need
was.
To keep him long-term, and we're going to find out how good those young guys are, and we're going to find out how good those young picks become. But they traded away their future to become a championship team. And at least for the time being, they're a championship contender, but they cannot afford to lose him.
Maybe he'll just go and sign with Boston. You know, continue
that
was inevitable,
that
right?
Ship
he was. I am so glad to not be writing. I mean, I'm still writing about Boston's assets. I'm done with. I just can't handle it anymore. Like, it's been 3 years of they can go get anybody, which they could if they wanted to,
yeah.
but them holding their. They're keeping their powder dry, like, so to speak.
The Kyrie thing was a weird one because I think most of Boston is happy he's gone, but at the same time, it's like, wait, that would have been great if it worked out.
Most of Boston is very happy. Exactly. They're watching what's happening in Brooklyn right now and wondering if that's going to go the way. Arash, always appreciate it, man. Good to catch up with this week. Thanks for joining me here on the pod.
Thanks.